I've spent all week with the Nelson family off and on. And whenever you're with the Nelson family, you, not this Nelson family, different Nelson family, you hear stories about fishing. And every story I heard about Delbert was Delbert could go to a dry stream and catch a trout out of it. And I heard all kinds of stories, only some of which I really believed. But I heard all of these stories, and it made me think of my one fishing story in my whole entire life. And so I'm going to tell it. And if I've told it before, I'm going to apologize for telling it again. But I went fishing with a bunch of our old guys one time, and Tim, who was the oldest of the old guys, led me out to this little spot. And I'd cast my little, that's how I do it. He would tie my hook, and I'd cast it out, and it'd float down. And sure enough, I'd get a fish, and I'd get that fish in. And then I'd get the fish off the hook, and Tim would make fun of me. And he'd fix my hook again, and I'd throw it back out. And it was fun to catch fish. First time in my life I had ever caught anything. And it was so exciting for about an hour until my feet were numb. And then I thought, well, maybe there's something better to do. Now, if you are a commercial fisherman, it's more than just fun to catch fish. You've got to catch fish. We've got a story this morning that we're going to unfold a little bit that's from Luke chapter 5 that is the story of four fishermen. And these four fishermen are interesting because I think if we kind of read between the lines of their story, we might see a couple of things. Now, we're going to have to suppose a couple of things, and you're going to have to imagine with me in a few minutes what these four men might have gone through in their lives. But I want us to start by just reading the story, and I'll read a little and preach a little. But here's how the story goes. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. And he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. And then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we have worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets." Okay, let's stop there for just a second and kind of look at this story. This is a little different than the way Matthew and Mark tell the story. But Luke is telling the story from the perspective of what's going on before Jesus really has this conversation about catching men. And so the story begins with Jesus finding a natural pulpit. Now here's what I imagine has happened to Jesus. Jesus is farther away from the lake than you might think, and the people start crowding. Now, I think Jesus and I have one thing in common, and that's when people get close, he takes a step back. I don't really think that's the case, but so Jesus would take a step back, and the people move a little closer, and he steps back, and the people move a little closer, and he steps back, and finally, he's got his heels in the water, and he says, "This just isn't going to work. There's a boat, and there's the fishermen, and they're obviously not using the boat because they're over there washing their nets, when really they should be over here listening to me." That's not what Jesus says, but he had to think that for a second. And so he calls Simon, "Whose boat's this?" And Simon is going to say, "It's my boat," and he says, "Can I preach in it?" And so I imagine he goes 5 or 10 feet into the water, and now the people will come to the water's edge, but they don't want to get their feet wet. And so he starts preaching and continues preaching. And then there is this conversation when the sermon is done where Jesus says, "Let's go fishing." And Peter, being who Peter is, I imagine sighed and said, "We have worked all night and we have fished all night. And we caught nothing. And that's why," again, he doesn't say this in the gospel account, "that's why we were over there cleaning our nets. Because we didn't catch any fish, we just caught a bunch of other junk." And Jesus says, "Let's go." And maybe my favorite line in all of Peter's lines, and like Aaron said, Peter's got some great lines. My favorite line, maybe, that Peter offers anywhere in the gospels is that simple line that says, "Because you said so." See, God can do amazing things through people who say, "Because you say so." One of the things I think we need to do a better job at as the church in the 21st century is to have this mentality of Peter that says even if Jesus asks what seems impossible or what seems ridiculous or seems out of the ordinary, if Jesus asks it of us, he must believe that either A, we can do it, or B, he's going to provide another way to get it done. And so maybe our voice needs to be the voice of Peter a little more often that says, because you say so, Lord. So we keep reading. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. Remember, the other boat is still on the shore and they're still cleaning their nets. And so when they came and filled both boats so full that the boats began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." Remember that line. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up to the shore and left everything and followed him. Okay, I've preached this text a number of times, and here is how I have preached this text every single time. I've got to the very last words that said, "Now you're going to fish for men," and said, "Let's talk about evangelism. And let's talk about going into a world and trying to catch some fish. Let's go in and look for those who are seeking, and let's go out there and find those who are interested in the gospel." I don't want to do that this morning. And not that that is unimportant. That is a crucial thing that we need in the 21st century church as much as we need what we're going to do. But I want us to talk about Peter. And Peter's line, "Go away because I am a sinful man." See, Peter's first response in the presence of God after he says, "Because you say so," is one of unworthiness. It's one of spiritual reflection. It's one of Peter looking at the great miracle that, and Peter's no fool. I mean, Peter has grown up on this lake or other lakes like it, and he has fished all of his life except for maybe a chunk of it. And in the midst of his fishing, he knows that when you go all night and don't catch fish, you're not going to catch any more in the morning. And so what has obviously happened is a work of this man who's standing in his boat teaching a bunch of people. And so Peter realizes his unworthiness. But then the story changes. Because following that, it says they left everything and followed. Okay, let me give you the story of one of my friends that I went through college with. He was born into a house of privilege. In fact, he was the only one of my friends who had a big TV in the dorm room. Now, I mean, you can go get a big TV now for a couple hundred bucks at Sam's, but you think back to the old days of black and whites when I was in college, and those were expensive. And so I remember we would love to go to his dorm room because not only did he have the best TV, but he had the best refrigerator that always was stocked with the best drinks. He had Dr. Pepper. And Pringles. Not Pringles weren't in the refrigerator, but so we would go there and we would eat all the rich kid stuff. And I remember the rich kid decided that he was going to switch from pre-med that was going to follow in the footsteps of his father to missions. And his parents said, "Time to cut you off." And he got to keep his TV and he got to keep his refrigerator, but now his refrigerator would be empty and there would be no Dr. Peppers in there. There would be a bottle of Lubbock water. And so you know how bad it's gotten when your refrigerator is only stocked with Lubbock water. His parents said, "If you'll go back to pre-med, we'll take care of you again." He left everything and followed him. Okay, think about Peter, Andrew, James, and John for a second. Here are four men. And if you read about fishermen in the first century world, they weren't exactly the richest of the rich, but they did all right because the Sea of Galilee, or this lake as it is often called, was populous with little things called tilapia. And tilapia produced lots of little tilapia. And little tilapia grow to big tilapia pretty quick. And so it was a great place to fish. And they probably did all right for themselves most of the time. But they leave everything. So let me give you the one point of the sermon. God sometimes looks for those who are on the clearance rack. Now, you might be saying, what do you mean by that? You've just kind of praised these four or five men for probably being decent fishermen and at least making a decent wage. But what's interesting is they are four young men who are fishing and not doing something else. Okay, usually I don't give you much Jewish history, but I want to give you a little piece of Jewish history from the first century. Here's what would happen in a Jewish community in the first century. You would have these various kind of, I don't want to ever call myself a rabbi, but they're kind of like me. They're kind of the preacher. And they would walk through town and they would talk with the kids. And so as they talked with the kids, they would see the ones that were sharp. And they would see the ones that knew the Talmud or that knew what God had said through the first five books, through the Torah. And they would walk through town and then they would get to the end of their journey through town and they'd meet back at the middle and they'd say, Connor, you're on my list. You come and follow me. And he'd look at Jonah and say, Jonah, you are not on my list. You go do something else. And he'd look at this little Simon and say, Simon, in a couple years, I'm coming back to get you because you're the smartest of these three. And they would take the best of the best and say, you come and follow me. And those teenagers and young teenagers would leave everything and follow the rabbi. They would become his band of followers. It was a Hebrew term called the Talmudim. And they would then follow him, and for the rest of their life, until they had proven unworthy, they would be the disciples of the rabbi. What are these four guys doing? Are they following a rabbi around? They are four just, and Peter's going to say this about himself, they are four just regular, old, ordinary guys that weren't the best of the best. And so because they weren't the best, they were either weren't chosen or they were sent home. And if you were a Jewish boy and you were chosen but you didn't cut it, they would say, go back and do what your dad does. And these four boys are back doing what their dad does. And then here comes Jesus, and he says the same exact line that the rabbi would say to all the junior high and high school boys in the town. He would say, you're worthy, you come and follow me. And I don't know if there was more conversation, and I don't know if there was a response from these four men, but it must have been at least a little bit of joy to say, here's a teacher that wants us. So here's the point. God shops the clearance racks. And my friends, all of us are on it. Okay, I don't know about you, but I'm cheap. I'm cheap about a lot of stuff, and I'm not cheap about some things, but I'm really cheap on clothes. You know, I figure I'm not the best looking fella anyway, so why buy the best clothes just to try to fool you into making me look 10 years younger? So I buy most of my clothes on eBay. Okay, so on eBay, sometimes you will get a $60 pair of jeans for $10. And that's what I did one time. I got a $60 pair of jeans for $10, and then I held them up, and I forgot to read the fine print that said one leg is 32, the other leg is 36. Thankfully, the 32 works, and I know a lady that cut them off and made the other one 32. It was a clearance rack. No one else, if Jonah would have bought that pair of pants, he'd have fit in the 36 just fine and look like a dork with the pants up to his knee. It's a clearance rack item. No one really wants that. Is that where these four men are? What shocks me about Jesus more than anything else is whom Jesus chooses. Four fishermen sent back home to do their dad's work. He chooses tax collector in a little bit. He chooses women who do not have the best reputation. And he says, come join the band. And he chooses these people who stand out, not because of their success and because of their triumph and because of their greatness, but they stand out because they are so different than everybody else that they don't fit in. And I look at this room and he's done the same thing. It flabbergasts me That God would take a shy introvert, doesn't like to touch people, would just as soon sit in a room with one lamp and a pen and a book, and he would make that guy one of your preachers. But God chooses to shop the clearance rack. Just think of a few stories for a second. We could do this for hours. We're going to do it for just a blip. Abraham. God looks at Abraham and says, I'm going to work it through you, buddy. We're going to bless this whole world. And Abraham is saying, I'm old. And God's going to look at Moses, and Moses is going to be out in the wilderness of Midian, and he's going to say, I want you to go back and go to Egypt. And Moses is going to say, hold on a second, I'm a murderer and a wanted man, and I'm also too old. And he's going to look at David, and David is smaller than all of his brothers, and he's younger than all of his brothers. And yet God is going to say through Samuel, choose that guy. He's going to be the greatest king ever. And he'll look at Naomi, who is the mother-in-law to Ruth. And Naomi's broke and has nothing and has lost everything. And he's going to say, I'm going to use you. And her response might have been, but I'm poor and I'm broken. And he's going to use Timothy, who was kind of a softy and who was anxious and had ulcers probably. And he's going to use Gideon, who said, show me how great you are by making shadows move and by soaking things and making it dry. And he's going to look at Elijah, who's scared spitless to do anything most of the time. And he's going to look at Martha, who frets, and Paul, who kills people, and John the Baptist, who's just plain weird. And he's going to look at all of those characters, none of whom fit in. And he's going to say, you are the ones I'm going to change a world with. You are the ones that are going to make the difference. Abraham, it's going to be your son, Isaac, that then is going to have Jacob and Esau. And Jacob's then going to have 12 sons. And we're going to start Israel out of you, my friend. And he's going to look at Moses and say, you're a wanted man, but you're going to go back and you're going to say, let my people go. And eventually, with a few things from me, God is going to move Israel out of Egypt and into Canaan. And he'll look at David and say, you may be too young and you may be too small, but you're going to be the king that everybody talks about for the rest of history. And every other character in that book. Because God still shops the clearance racks. In fact, maybe that's where he finds the best deals. You ever go to a clearance rack at a nice store and you get to the clearance rack and you look at all the signs around them and all you pick up that tag and your eyes go, I'm not paying that for a shirt. But you get to the clearance rack and you find that same shirt that was last year's model that's gone from that price that made your eyes bulge to $6.50 and you say, deal. And you proudly wear that shirt that you paid $6.50 for as long as your wife will let you wear that shirt until she hides it from you. And you proudly think, look at what I found. God does the same exact thing with you. He got you on the clearance rack. He got you for $6.50. And in the midst, actually, he got you for a lot more than that because he got you because of his son. But he gets you messed up and he gets you in a place of difficulty and he gets where you're too old or you're too young or you're too poor or you run from God or you got issues or whatever it is that you fill in your blanks with. And he says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to change the world through you. That's pretty spectacular. Okay, I've been thinking a lot this week about men in my life that modeled and mentored and rescued and helped. And I've sent a couple of notes just because, for whatever reason, God has placed that kind of on my heart. All the men that God has used to hold your preacher up, some of them might shock you. And you would think, God used them? Because God shops the clearance rack. God looks at us and he sees us for more than what we see ourselves. Because while I see that shirt for $6.50, nobody else knows that that shirt costs $6.50. And while you look in the mirror and you see yourself as a failure, or you see yourself as anxious, or you see yourself as not a people person, or you see yourself in whatever of 100 ways you might see yourself, that's not the way God sees you. He doesn't see the $6.50 shirt. He sees perfection. And he says, that's what I want to use to go out and change the world. And he's going to say at the Sea of Galilee, or as Luke calls it, the Sea of Gennesaret, he's going to say at that lake, he's going to say, let's talk about you four for a second. You are done catching fish. You are done with the mundane. You are done with the day-to-day. Now you're going to be involved in real ministry, in real life, and you're no longer going to be second class. Because God's going to use you for the most divine purpose He can find. Every one of those men will live out that call. He makes the same call to us. You can be my people to change the world. And He doesn't care about your age. And He doesn't care about your ethnicity. And He doesn't care about your level of education. And He doesn't care if you got money or if you don't. And He doesn't care if you're a man or a woman. And He doesn't care, and we could fill in a million more blanks. What He says is, you go do what I've called you to, because you're mine. And our response ought to be just like a young Peter. Because you say so, Lord. Okay, again, favorite line. Because you say so, I'm going to let down the net. He lets down the net. And my guess is there was that line repeated over and over in the ministry of Jesus as Peter talks back and forth. You've said do this, and so I will. And I hope that's our answer as well. Okay, I love sports movies. Those are my favorite kind of movies. There was a movie that came out a number of years ago. And in fact, Jerry McCormick and I talk about our favorite two movies. I don't know if this is Jerry's favorite, but he likes Hoosiers better than Glory Land. And I like Glory Land better than Hoosiers. But Glory Land tells the story of a college that's eventually going to become UTEP. But before it becomes UTEP, it is Texas Western College. And in 1965, Texas Western College has tried to recruit great athletes, and they couldn't do it. They kind of get the remnants. All the young men that everybody else passes on. They're a small little school right on the border of Mexico. Nobody wants to go there, and so their athletes aren't near as good as the athletes other places. For whatever reason, Coach Haskins, which is the head coach of that team, gets these guys to play together, and they start playing like a team, and it turns out they're really pretty good. And they get all the way to the national championship. Now, some of you who are basketball fans would remember that in 1965, you had a little place called Kentucky that was one of the powerhouses. They were where the best kids wanted to go play basketball. And so it's David versus Goliath. It's Texas Western, this group of has-beens, never-beens, all kinds of beens, and a goofy coach with Kentucky. And Texas Western wins the national championship. And so it's this David and Goliath story. It's look who won. And the greatest thing about that story is that it's just regular old kids who beat the best of the best. Okay, folks, we are regular old kids. The greatest glory land there is has nothing to do with a basketball movie. It has to do when those who are the also-rans and the kind of sort-ofs and the odd ducks who raise their hand to the call of God and say, because you say so. And that's all the rest of us. Okay, I don't usually do activities. I want you to raise your hand. Okay, you can do it. Preacher makes you do very few jumping jacks. I want you to repeat after me. Because you say so. That's glory land. That's when God's people say, whatever it is you want to do to this world, you do it through me, because I'm going to give you the chance. Now let's go out and do exactly what we just raised our hand for. And let's be God's in a world that is desperate for God's people to step out in it. And let's live a little bit different life than we do. Okay, Jacob's got a song he's going to sing. I'm going to be here. Michael's there. I'll be at the back in a few minutes. Elders are through the room. The best people on the planet live in this place and worship in this place. If you need God's help, find it. And if you can't find it somewhere, you come and find me and we'll get it done. If you need us, let us know as we stand and sing.